The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
So our parami this week, our sixth parami, is patience. But before be patient, before we move on to patience, I want to say some things about last week's parami, which was virya. Usually translated as energy, literally meaning virility. It's also translated as heroism. And Joseph Goldstein says it's fine to translate it as courage because it's facing what is difficult with valor. And I think that's a really good understanding of the sort of energy that we want to bring to our practice, this facing difficulty with valor. And today, as I was taking my morning walk, trying to get my steps in before it got too hot, I was listening to a Dharma talk by Spring Washam, who is a wonderful teacher, author of A Fierce Heart. She was at Common Ground about 2 years ago. And this is a talk that was also on 10% Happier. And her talk was called The Dharma of Harriet Tubman. And it was, she's going to be teaching a course by that name at the East Bay Meditation Center. But she said that she saw Harriet Tubman as a bodhisattva, that she was the embodiment of the bodhisattva, of a being who is determined to save others, to save all sentient beings, that she lived as an enslaved person. And Spring said one of the most interesting things about her was that even though she was enslaved, she refused ever to think of herself as a slave. That she had this determination, and she was very badly treated while she was enslaved. And she eventually got free, got to Philadelphia, and met up with people from the Underground Railroad. And then she went back and went back and went back and went back and brought other people out of slavery. And if you haven't seen the movie Harriet, I highly recommend it. It is very, very inspiring about her life. But, this is, I just thought that was so inspiring this morning when I thought about that notion of courage and energy and valor in the face of difficulty, and this notion of the bodhisattva, that we practice not just for ourselves, but we practice for the benefit of all. Because one of the deep understandings that we have as we walk on this path, as we get into it more deeply, is that we realize the separation of self and other in some ways is a really deep illusion. That as we move further and further along the path of Dharma, that sense of self, that sense of separateness really starts to erode and disappear, and we see much more clearly and deeply our profound interconnectedness. So moving from energy to patience, this idea of facing difficulties with valor and a sense of persistence, patience, and in Pali the word is Khanti, Khanti, and it's often understood as forbearance, to endure without complaint, steadfastness, and perseverance in performing a task. And when we use it in English and we talk about someone being patient, you can think about a quilter, thousands and thousands and thousands of small stitches to make a quilt. Or I've heard many Zen students talk about the challenge of sewing their rohatsu. Am I saying that word right? Rakasu, rohatsu. But sewing that little zen, their little zen bib, and how often they have to restitch because the stitches have to be exactly the same size. So we think about patients often as in this idea of working on something that takes a long time, perseverance in performing a task, enduring without complaint. I have a good friend who is sort of a recovering Catholic, and she told me for Lent this year she was giving up complaining. So when we'd meet on FaceTime, she'd say, "This is not a complaint. This is just some information, because I've given up complaining for Lent." But patience is really allowing the moment to be as it is. It is understanding both that things are always changing, to understand that in every moment, there is this moment, the next moment, the next moment, the next moment. So patience is also grounded in this truth of impermanence that we've talked about a lot. But at the same time, it is an understanding that it cannot be other than it is yet. So it's an understanding that whatever causes and conditions have come to bring this moment into being, this is a lawful moment. This is the effect of causes. So it couldn't be other than it is yet. And it's this dual understanding, both of impermanence, and sometimes change is so incremental. Sometimes change just is so fine, and it's so hard to see it. Other times change is really rapid. So when we're practicing patience, the idea is that we really want to see this moment as it is. Now, Mark and Shelley often talk about, everything is moving, that nature is always moving, and there's all this movement in us. And I thought about that when I was reflecting on this kind of impermanence. So when we're practicing patience, we're really making this effort to be aware, to see how the how the moment is, and bring this sort of mindfulness to it. And patience is not resignation. That's the big takeaway. That was what I thought about most when I was reflecting on it. I think we often confuse, in kind of the popular understanding of patience, that it's about being resigned to something, that you just kind of abandon participation in the present moment. You kind of give up. You resign yourself to something. And resignation often has a kind of poor me flavor to it. Sorry for myself, a sort of kind of victim texture to it. When we resign ourselves, we often say, "I wash my hands of it. I throw up my hands. I wash my hands of it. I'm done with it." And that is not patience. It may be waiting something out. Patience really has this quality of being really interested in the moment and allowing. And I was thinking, how in many of the Brahma Viharas we talk about the near enemy and the far enemy, and the near enemy is something that sort of looks like, so for in case of loving kindness, there'd be a kind of real attachment that may look like loving kindness, but it's not. And then the far enemy in loving kindness is going to be hatred. And I was thinking about patience, and I thought, the sort of near enemy of patience is this sort of resignation. I'm just, I'm done with this. I'm just going to wait it out. And I think the opposite of that, the far enemy, the one that's really clear, would be rushing. And again, you know, we can think about how often when we know ourselves to be impatient, we really feel all this kind of rushing energy. And, you know, the examples people often talk about, you know, getting stuck in traffic, having your computer go on the go, all these sorts of things that we have this kind of forward-going momentum, and something intervenes. And it's my experience, the more I am rushing, the likelier it's going to be that I'm going to find some sort of a glitch, but that may just be kind of the karmic kickback. But, you know, we have this sort of rushing energy, a lot of momentum a lot of the time. And when we meet an obstacle, the question is, can we bring some interest to that moment? Patience it's interested, and patience can be spacious. I think that's a challenge, but patience can be spacious. When we're truly patient, we really kind of decenter the self. We're allowing the moment to be as it is. We're interested in it. We're making space for it. And we get out of our sort of, it's all about me story, which is, you know, for many of us, myself included, a pretty easy narrative to get into. So when we meet an obstacle, can we be interested and sort of spacious in that moment, rather than bringing a lot of resentment to it? And I was thinking that one of the examples of patience that always impressed me when I was sort of reading about it was, you know, the story of Jane Goodall going to Gombe when she was a young woman in her late teens or early 20s, and she just wanted to study the chimpanzees. And what she had to do for months was just try to find them and follow them. And that's all she did for months, was just to track them, and she was pretty much by herself, take notes and just observe them, often from a great distance. And after many months, she became such an expected part of the environment that she was able to really watch the chimpanzee community really closely. And she spent years doing this. She spent decades doing this. But that sort of persistence from the very beginning, that sort of patience to go out every day, and many days she would only hear them and they'd become aware of her and they would move off pretty quickly. And she just really, really stuck to it and made these, you know, most amazing discoveries. Discoveries that the chimpanzees were tool users, for example. But I think that's just such a clear example of accepting how it is and being okay with it. And that sort of understanding, this is going to change. But this is how it is right now, and moving on with it. And I think often in art, in science, in teaching, in learning, in so many endeavors, patience is really such an integral part of really, it sounds a little paradoxical to say, of making progress, but to really have the patience to be with things. Be with them as they are, to be curious, not to rush, but to really have this kind of allow, okay, this is how it is in this moment. What needs to be done? what's appropriate. I also had what was for me a real interesting insight into patients this past winter. Some of you know that in February, we adopted a rescue dog, and she is 6 years old. She's a miniature Australian Shepherd, and she was used by a commercial breeder. And she had been actually in foster care for a number of months before we got her, but she was still totally traumatized and very afraid of people. And for the first 3 weeks, she was almost inevitably down in our basement, and she'd squeeze in between the dryer and the wall. It was really hard to get her out, or she'd burrow under camping gear, and she would just, and the design of our house is such that there's always open access to the basement, so it's not like we could shut the basement door, but it has just, it was so challenging to get her to eat. She wouldn't eat if anyone could see her. She would just, we often try to keep her in our bedroom, and like she would get behind the printer, and I'd think, how could anything possibly kind of squeeze behind the printer? After, you know, now that we've had her, it's June. She is a lot calmer. I'm still the only person in our family who can touch her, and she comes up to me frequently to be petted. But and my husband feeds her, and now we can we feed her in the bathroom, so we have another dog that gets fed in another part of the house. And having another dog was a condition of her adoption. She had to go to a home that had another dog. And now he can actually put her food down and stay in the bathroom while she eats. But before, she would not come near him. I think she had some very bad experiences with men. But she's just so much better and so much happier. But still, I have this ambition to take her for really long walks. And we get about four blocks from our house, and it's like a switch flips. And I can't do it. I need to go back. 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 And she just kind of freaks out. And so we go back, and sometimes we get five blocks and sometimes seven. But, and I just kept thinking about this beautiful, very intelligent little creature. And I just had so much patience to deal with this. But I thought, it's because of compassion, that compassion is the foundation of patience. At least in this case, because it was never exasperation to hurry her up or coerce her or make her do something she didn't want to do. But I think that's because that I could have a surprising amount of patience for me, because it was so clear that she was a suffering being and a being who had suffered tremendously. And I think if we can bring that to our current practice around patience, if when we're interacting with people and it's really difficult and it calls for patience to realize the suffering of other beings, and we can have compassion for ourselves in that moment and compassion for others, And it really makes us able to stay in the present moment, because we know there's suffering. And so in this time of pandemic, how do we manifest, how do we practice this kind of patience with ourselves, allowing the moment to be as it is, knowing that it couldn't be other than it is yet, and just having this sense of, okay, this is how it is, and this real feeling of compassion for all the many, many, many suffering beings in this in this pandemic, not only the people who are sick or who have died, but people who are losing their livelihood, and to really have patience with the impatience of others. And I think that's probably where our skillfulness may be most tested in being patient. To be patient with the impatience of others. Others who can't allow it to be the way it is, who are complaining or frustrated or angry. The other piece of this that I wanted to bring up is that there's also a kind of shadow side to patience. And this is the admonition for many people who are oppressed to be patient. Now, this is something that, you know, we have heard, you know, just be patient. The wheels of justice turn slowly. And we really need to investigate for ourselves when people tell us that, you know, we just need to be patient. Or particularly some other group needs to be patient. And, you know, as there are various sorts of changes made and things have to go through city councils or through referendums or, you know, there are all sorts of things like that. There are processes that take time, and we can be patient with those processes if they're fair. But we really need to just have our antennae, our antennae out for times when people who have suffered tremendously from inequity are told to be patient, you know, wait your turn, or things are going to, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, all these sorts of platitudes. So that's where we need to bring our Viria to the force, and we're going to be talking about truthfulness next. So we will also be sort of talking about how to manifest that. But I think patience is really important for us in this time, and just to notice that when we're really able to be with the moment, to allow the moment to be as it is, to recognize it, that we're probably suffering less. You know, this is that sort of beautiful empirical part of the path, because we always get to see, you know, does this lead to more or less suffering? And I really believe that when we ground our patience in an understanding of impermanence, in an understanding of causes and conditions, in a very wise and kindly perception into compassion, to see the role of compassion in that, that we'll find that this is something that turns out to be a very, very helpful way to go about working with our daily life. Courage and patience, you know, we're in it for the long haul, for the liberation of all. So I think that we are, you know, we have this sort of, want to hold both, this sort of courage, this idea we're in it for the long haul, and also to just sometimes allow the moment to be as it is and bring this awareness to it. So I'd love to hear from other people how that lands for you, whether it makes sense to think about practicing with it, or any other comments. So just unmute yourself and jump in.
This is so pertinent. I think I mentioned to you that this was going to be the perfect thing for me after finishing my very first shift back in a retail setting. And it was a whole day filled with everybody working on patience and mindfulness, you know, being mindful that when you're going around the corner, you have to yell out because someone else might be there. Being told even by managers that everything takes so much longer and we are no longer at all about getting things done in any certain amount of time. Like the first priority is safety. Getting things done is second, third, and fourth priority. So it's just like going back to a completely different job in a completely different setting. And just to be there with that don't know mind and feel patient with oneself when something feels like it's taking 10 times longer than it should. So I had a whole day of practicing with patience.
Well, it's really heartening though to sound that sounds as if people are really putting the employees and the customers, their benefit first, that really protecting them. That just sounds really heartening.
It was, I didn't really know what to expect, and I was really pleased with the amount of care that's been going into the planning of it. And yeah, thank you.
I noticed, I mentioned earlier in chatting, I went to the auto shop today, and that just reminded me that the tone of the whole establishment was really different than I remembered. It was quieter. There was more of a rhythm and less of a, you know, everybody racing around and all kinds of different things happening at the same time. It just felt peaceful. It was really, I hadn't really been conscious of that. And they were very careful, and they took care of me also and themselves at the same time, which was lovely to see. I'm taking Oren Sofer's course on why speech right now. He's giving an, he talked about the four qualities and what you brought up, Patrice, about who can tell whom. This is how I hear it, to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
The thought came to mind, who, position, and he talks, instead of using timeliness, he is using context sensitive.
Oh.
And he's including in that one's location in hierarchy, power, identity, intersection, you know, just kind of being sensitive to one's position and to the listener's position if you're speaking or vice versa. And that came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Patience, yes. I've been told that by people. And I think to myself, it's not for you to be advising me to be patient right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I know patience is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to share that with the group. I just learned it today, and I thought that really changed my thinking around right speech and wise speech. And he's also talking, I think we're going to talk at length also about the notion of who decides what pleasing means in the Dharma sense, not mm-hmm. in a socially constructed sense. So,
that's really helpful idea. Instead of timing, you have to think about context, because that's broader than timeliness. I mean, timeliness is a part of that, but yeah. Context is a. Thank you. Thanks for offering that. And so many times people say, you just have to be patient, and they really mean, just shut up.
Yeah, well, it's the intention there is not for the other's well-being. It's to make mm-hmm. ourselves more comfortable, right? Like,
yeah.
You understand it, so.
Yeah, I was thinking, too, about how patience applies to processing, you know, because there are times when I'm processing, and I'm either processing aloud in dialogue by asking questions, and I think that there's some provocation that comes up sometimes, and wanting to have a position, you know, wanting to not solidify my position, but to clarify my position on whatever the contextual topic is. And so patience is really needed for communication, because I'm just noticing that. I'm noticing that I need to be patient with myself. I need to be patient with others. That I'm almost like practicing patience much more regularly and with much more awareness. And I think that given some of the things that have been changing due to COVID, or specifically, I'm finding that I need to really cultivate that sense of spaciousness, not disengagement, but a kind of engagement that is willing to be in the moments as they evolve, or where I am now, or, you know, so I just think that I was part of a training for restorative justice, and it was online. It was through the Minnesota Department of Education, and we were all in on the screen, and it was the hosts were somewhat familiar with technology, but not completely familiar with technology. And so we kind of bumped along with many things not running smoothly. And so being patient was just allowing, you know, just allowing what was happening to happen without feeling overly critical about it, without feeling, you know, put out, just without being anxious. That's something that comes up for me around patience. I feel my own anxiety rising, you know, and that becomes what I have to mitigate in order to stay open with patience.
Thank you.
Yeah, I could go. Thank you, Patrice, for many things that you said. I've been reading this, I've just finished it today, actually, the Norman Fisher book on the Paramitas, and it was just a coincidence or synchronistic that I was reading this at this time that we're going through them. And he ended the book on one thing that you had said about doing the least amount of harm, you know, and I really resonated with that. And something else you said about forbearance, because I remember sort of about the Stoic philosophy of bear and forbear, and, you know, and in Norman Fisher's analysis of patience, he worked a lot with anger. We talked a lot about anger and just being able to be with feelings and be with pain and be with what is going on. But as you said, there's that other side of that it, in some contexts, it's not right, you know, to do that. And there are times where you need to be vigilant and not coming across as patient, but there's a fullness to that. So it isn't just being passive. It isn't passivity. And I think you've said that very well. That's all for me. Thank you.
Yeah, patience is not, it's not passivity. It's not resignation. It should have a very active, interested quality. Allowing them and being really interested in it.
Thank you so much for what you had to say and what everybody said. I'm supposed to be attending a different class, but when I saw your subject was patience, I was like, I got to be here, because this is a big issue for me. And I'm not as aware of it as I'd like to be. And I'm becoming more aware. And some of the things that you were saying about busyness and just being rushing. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to notice, I mean, I don't really need to rush, but I notice that I rush. It's the habit. And I always go, well, I was born and raised in New York, and you know, there's a reason for it. Not that it makes any difference. It doesn't mean anything, but I learned that early on, you know, the rushing and the having to do so much and all of that. And so this practice is so really helpful, because many of the things, you know, when you were saying about part of the practice is of patience is just accepting where we are, that's a big piece of it. And I just hadn't put those two things together, but yes, of course. And the use of compassion, that, you know, bringing in the compassion for ourselves and then for others who are impatient, you know, when I'm impatient, mm-hmm. to bring in compassion. And then also when I'm with other people that are impatient, and when something goes wrong, you know, I notice how, you know, it's so, I get frustrated, like just like that, you know, and maybe we all do, maybe that's a normal response, and not to give into that, not to immediately let that, you know, just like you said, bring some interest to it. Oh, the computer broke. Oh, the internet's unstable. Okay. It's not the end of the world. You know, I used to think these things are the end of the world and they're such big deals. And then you look back the next day and you go, why was I so impatient? Why was I frustrated? So this is really, for me, a work in progress, this patience, you know, that idea of not rushing, you know, slowing down. My grandmother once had a sign in her kitchen. It used to say, the hurrier I go, no, it's something like the, oh yeah, the hurrier I go, the behinder I get. And it's true in a way, you know, the mm-hmm. more I rush something, you know, you sprain your ankle or you do something, like you said, it just, mm-hmm. it's counterproductive. So it's just need that reminder. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had an awareness arrive here just as all of this was unfolding. Everybody sharing in your instruction, Patrice. I had an event that unfolded this week that I had a very strong reaction to, and it's now rippling out in many ways. And I realized something about what it was, and it definitely involved patience. About, I don't know, a week and a half ago, I noticed a little hole in my neighbor's house. And there were a black-capped chickadee couple that were posturing and hesitating and going in and out. And they were obviously feeding their babies. And I was very patiently present to this process. And just waiting, you know, to see when I'd get to see the babies and so on and so forth. And we had a couple of days of really hard rain. And so I was like not connected to watching the flying in and out and in and out and in and out. And all of a sudden, they were not here outside my window on the plum tree doing their little stops in terms of finding food for their babies. And there was no activity. And it's right out this window here. And I realized that I missed it. So either something happened to the babies, or they flew. And I realized how patient I felt as I was going through that process. And the minute the outcome I expected didn't unfold, there was this terrible suffering, this loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized there's this quality of seeing myself as patient when I'm really quite attached to some kind of an outcome or a result or an expectation. And suddenly this whole scenario with the birds just really rippled out to a number of other circumstances that are unfolding in my life right now, where I was joking, talking with somebody earlier, I feel like I'm in the midst of an existential crisis with this. And it's really, this is really at the heart of it, is this subliminal attachment, expectation, desire for outcome, and how there's so many layers of attachment, so many layers of attachment. So that just, I woke up right in the middle of this class today with that awareness. So thank you all for guiding me.
Well, thanks, Nancy. And you know, I think you hit exactly this attachment to an outcome, because often it makes sense for us to have an idea of the direction we want to go, what we want to achieve. I mean, like we talk about, racial equity. But the attachment is often to something unfolding in a particular way. So that we talk about wanting to be free from suffering but it's the attachment that has to look a certain way, be a certain way. And a lot of it is not knowing, that everything is changing. There are lots of causes and conditions, and we can still keep heading in the, in a direction that's consonant with our ultimate aspirations without attaching to a very particular way of how it's going to look. And I think that was exactly what you were pointing at. It's the attachment to a particular kind of outcome. It's not that we abandon our sense of the direction we want to move in, but it's the attachment to how that might manifest that usually gets us in trouble.
And if I can just add, the without practice, I could get just lost in the story. And that's where practice is just so essential, that willingness and that intention to be awake and present. If I hadn't been present to what was really unfolding in this direct experience of this sense of loss and what have you, and be able to clearly see it for what it was, I couldn't have gone to that awareness of realizing, oh, after the fact, there's data right here. That the subtlety of this attachment is here, even as I'm living in this spaciousness of feeling very present with the unfolding, and how the unexpected, when it arrives, then that's when we can really see, or I can see more clearly, oh, I am attached. That is here. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else want to say anything before we wrap up?
Patience, and that's a big one for me as well. And a couple of things come to mind. I noticed that you said grounding in impermanence, causes and conditions, and compassion. What I'm also realizing is helping me work with my hurriedness is grounding in present moment. And rather than trying to tackle the bigger so-called events in my life, it's the little things where I'm really practicing. Like, for example, when I the other day when I had my one-on-one Spanish lesson with a teacher from Oaxaca, Mexico, my young teacher, and I said, "Oh, Maite, I've been practicing for 20 years, lots of errors, because I've always rushed trying to learn this language. And so thank you so, every lesson I probably say to her at least a half a dozen times, thank you for your patience with me." because you're helping me correct these errors that I've been practicing for 20 years. And that's one area where I'm just deliberately observing myself and saying, oh, she's patient with me. I can take my time. The other one is going to the Wildlife Rehab Center and volunteering with it in the Avion Nursery with the songbirds, the baby birds. And my old occupation was rush. I was a nurse, and you can't just stand there. You know, there's always this, that. And I found when I walked in, I started out at 8 in the morning, and as soon as the birds sense that there's light, well, they're just chirping and talking away, and oh, they're all so hungry. And sometimes in a cage, there'll be 5 little ones just ready to eat. And it's so wonderful. It's like, they're going to be fine. We'll get to them. We have to get their trays all set up, their food all set up. As Hamsa, it's not the end of the world. They're not going to starve to death. And so I observed myself going, wow, this is the place where in a small way, I get to practice patience. And my teachers are these baby birds and these young interns that just recently graduated from college. They're just very matter of fact, and what a way to practice patience. Rather than tackling the bigger things, it's like, and I can tell when I've gotten off track because I'm agitated and then I'm not enjoying myself and I have to go, wait a minute. Wow. You're with these crows. You're with these crows. It's like, oh my gosh. And that brings me back to present moment. So that's one of the things in addition to impermanence, causes and conditions and compassion is present moment. Bringing me back and going, oh, I don't have to be. I just need to be with these crows. Or with ravens, or with these sparrows. So, thank you.
Thank you. It was in the early aughts, I spent a year volunteering at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center on a weekly basis, and it was such a great impetus to my practice, because what I really noticed is when I wasn't being mindful, the animals under my care suffered. You know, if I wasn't prepared, if I didn't have everything ready so that, and I wasn't working with young things, I was working with older animals that were really stressed out. And that if I wasn't completely prepared to do things in sort of a seamless, you know, very intentional way, it was stressful for them and they suffered. And it was so clear that my lack of mindfulness caused the animals to suffer, and it was just a really great lesson. So thank you everyone for being here tonight. I hope you'll, if it works out for you, you'll come back next week and we can talk some more about the Paramis. And again, I would encourage people to listen to Spring Washam's talk about the Dharma of Harriet Tubman on 10% Happier, the movie Harriet, and also, as I mentioned, our dear teacher, Shelley, also has an interview with Dan Harris on 10% Happier. So take a look at that. So thanks, everybody. See you next week.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.